Good morning. This is Neil Strausser with the CBS World News Roundup.
This is a painful step, and I'll give it to you straight. Each of us will have to use less oil and pay more for it.
The message from President Carter to the American people last night was blunt, and not everyone liked the taste of the medicine. The story of his speech from Robert Pierpoint.
It was President Carter biting the bullet, warning the American people that the nation's energy crisis is real, time is running short, and that increasing dependence on foreign oil is both expensive and dangerous. So Mr. Carter is taking action on his own, under a law that controls the price of domestic oil but gives him the power to lift those controls at the end of next month.
In order to minimize sudden economic shock, I've decided that phased decontrol of oil prices will begin on June 1st and continue at a fairly uniform rate over the next 28 months. The immediate effect of this action will be to increase production of oil and gas in our own country.
That is an oil company argument that lifting controls will bring more gas and oil, and there are some who disagree. At the same time, Mr. Carter wants to tax the windfall profits the oil companies will make and redistribute some of them to those hardest hit by the higher prices that are sure to result. That, of course, takes the cooperation of Congress, which he may not get. What Mr. Carter will get is some of the blame for the inflation of gasoline and heating oil prices, which will break through to new highs at just about presidential primary time next spring. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, the White House.
Estimates of the eventual additional cost of gasoline range from the administration's 4 or 5 cents to Senator Henry Jackson's 20 cents a gallon. Liberal critics like Senators Howard Metzenbaum say the decontrol will only add to inflation without producing much more oil.
The president's program will just totally enrich the oil companies at the expense of the American consumers. And instead of coming down and coming out for mandatory conservation measures, instead of emphasizing the need to develop alternative energy resources, what we're doing is providing a means to make the oil companies richer.
President Carter himself last night conceded that the windfall profits tax he proposes to keep from enriching the oil companies faces a tough fight in the Congress unless the American people add their voice to his.
As surely as the sun will rise tomorrow, the oil companies can be expected to fight to keep the profits which they have not earned. Unless you speak out, they will have more influence on the Congress than you do.
And immediately, the oil companies announced their opposition, saying the tax would only take away the incentive to explore for more domestic oil. Mobile Vice President Herbert Schmertz.
This isn't a windfall profit tax. This is a tax windfall for the U.S. Treasury would provide little or no incentive.
The president proposes to use the revenue from the tax to help poor families whose fuel bills will go up as a result of decontrol, to pay for more mass transit, to conserve fuel, and to study new alternative sources of energy. President Carter said last night that nuclear power remains an essential element in the nation's energy mix. But he also told the American people that he is appointing an independent commission to fully investigate the accident at the Three Mile Island plant.
You deserve a full accounting. And you will get it.
At Three Mile Island, where the final shutdown operation has not yet begun, a government official has told the AP that the reactor was actually out of control for several hours after the accident, despite different assurances from the power company. Some people always find some good in any situation. Some youngsters near the plant are doing a rush business, selling T-shirts which proclaim, "I didn't die at TMI," meaning Three Mile Island. And Marvin Kalb says some administration officials see profit in the salt debate, if ever there is agreement with the Russians.
It's only a matter of a few weeks, says Defense Secretary Brown. A month or so, says Secretary of State Vance. National Security Advisor Brzezinski says the U.S. and Russia are on the verge of agreement. They all agree it's close, but it's been that way now for a long time. Ever since October 1977, when President Carter predicted completion of the salt negotiation within a couple of weeks. If the official prognosis is accurate this time, then a Carter-Brezhnev summit may be held next month, perhaps in Geneva, if the Soviet leader's health prevents him from traveling to Washington. In expectation of a deal, Vance, Brown, and Brzezinski have launched a nationwide campaign to drum up popular support for the salt treaty. Perhaps it's only wishful thinking, turning a near tragedy into a possible asset, but officials think the crisis at the Three Mile Island nuclear reactor may actually end up helping the administration's case by highlighting the dangers of nuclear power and the need for tight control. Marvin Kalb, CBS News, the State Department.
The Labor Department reported this morning that unemployment last month held steady at the 4.5-year low of 5.7% of the labor force. Unemployment had been expected to rise as the economy slowed, but not yet. Unemployment in the auto industry is spreading as the Teamster Union dispute brings more parts shortages. Talks on a new contract continue today in Washington. Execution for an Alabama convict did not come at 1 minute past midnight today. Now it can't come until at least a week from today on Friday the 13th, as a result of a stay issued by Supreme Court Justice William Rehnquist. Rehnquist acted after the convict's mother appealed for a high court review of the death sentence. Bruce Hall has more from Holman Prison in Alabama.
A Catholic priest who was with condemned killer John Lewis Evans said he had just finished what was expected to be his final meal when the word came that the execution had been halted. Father Kevin Dignan said Evans was prepared to die and reacted angrily at first to the news, saying, "I don't believe it. I don't believe they are going to mess with me again." Then the priest said Evans began to cry and became very emotional as cheers could be heard from other inmates on death row. Later, the priest said Evans viewed this day of execution as a sign from God and that the convicted slayer now may change his mind and begin fighting for his life. So far, he has refused to appeal his death sentence. Officially, the Supreme Court order only delays the execution a week, but officials in Alabama said it would probably be another month before John Lewis Evans would again face the prospect of dying in the electric chair. Bruce Hall, CBS News, at Holman Prison in Alabama.
Executions have resumed in Iran, with the firing squads again at work today. Bill Plant reports from Tehran.
The first three prisoners to be executed since the lifting of the temporary ban on summary executions died early this morning in the city of Isfahan, 600 miles south of Tehran. New regulations for revolutionary courts announced yesterday provide for the death penalty. The trial of the three who died this morning was held several weeks ago, according to Radio Tehran. Two of the three were described as former agents of Savak, the Shah's secret police, and the third as a guard guilty of killing a local revolutionary leader. During the hiatus in executions ordered by Ayatollah Khomeini, there were no trials in Tehran, where the largest number of political prisoners is being held. But it's expected that the trials, including that of former Prime Minister Hoveyda, will begin soon. Bill Plant, CBS News, Tehran.
And at Pretoria Central Prison in South Africa, five convicted killers were sent to the gallows just after dawn today, including black revolutionary Solomon Malangu. President Carter and other foreign leaders had appealed for clemency for Malangu, who was convicted in the terrorist killings of two white men, even though it was found he did not fire the fatal bullets. There seems as much puzzlement as fighting in the current situation in Uganda. Randy Daniels tells us about it from Nairobi.
Kampala is tense and quiet this morning after 4 hours of artillery exchanges yesterday between Tanzanian troops and Ugandan soldiers trying to defend the city. Although the Tanzanians and a force of Ugandan guerrillas have virtually encircled the capital, they have not yet moved into Kampala itself. The lull in the fighting has most people in Uganda confused. Libyan units have completed their withdrawal from Kampala and may eventually be flown out of the country. Most of President Amin's troops are now situated around the industrial city of Jinja, about 50 miles east of the capital. The anti-Amin forces say the city is at their mercy, and the defending force of Ugandan soldiers inside Kampala is said to be small. There is little doubt that the Tanzanians can take Kampala when they want it, but they have decided to wait, and no one in Uganda seems to know why. Randy Daniels, CBS News, Nairobi.
Some of the answer may come from a claim today by Ugandan exile guerrillas that they, not Tanzanian forces, have captured virtually all of Kampala. No confirmation of that claim. French police today report that saboteurs exploded three plastic bombs at a plant where three experimental nuclear reactors for Iraq were being assembled. There's no word on whether any nuclear material was damaged in the blasts.